Hello and welcome to the Autism Mums podcast.
I'm Victoria.
And I'm Natalie.
We're two sisters raising autistic children who know the joy, the challenges and the everyday moments.
This is a supportive space for honest conversations, practical tips, shared strength and expert advice.
Whether you're celebrating a win, surviving a meltdown or just trying to make it through the day, we're right here with you.
Join us as we share the ups, the downs, and everything in between parenting autistic children.
If you've been putting off the puberty conversation because your life is already full to the brim, or you're just not sure where to start, then this episode is for you. Today we're talking to Kath Hackinson, sex educator and founder of Sex Ed Rescue, who shares practical, reassuring guidance on talking to autistic and ADHD kids about puberty, bodies, and growing up. Welcome, Kath. Can we begin with why sex education is often harder for autistic kids and teens, and what do parents need to understand first?
Oh, that is a really good question. I got a phone call one day from a journalist who'd been paid a lot of money to write a book about autistic teenagers, because all these parents were worried and about parenting their autistic teenager. And so they wanted to ask me questions about sex ed. And what was really interesting was that what I said to her, I said, were they talking to their kids about sex anyway? Chances were that they probably weren't talking to their non-autistic kids. And it was all, and what my thoughts are from that is that I think sometimes what happens is when, you know, you've got a kid who's autistic, and I'm autistic myself, late diagnosed, is it's like it's this huge learning curve. Because you've got to deal with all your own sort of trauma and thoughts and regrets and stuff with parenting. And then you've got to learn how to parent your child differently in a way that nurtures and supports their growth and doesn't traumatize them and stuff. And then throw sex ed into the basket. So you're already running to OT, speech therapists and all this stuff. And then you get, oh, you have to talk about love, sex, and relationships. And it's almost like the straw that broke the camel's back. It's like we've already got so much on our plate as parents anyway when we've got kids with additional needs. To then throw sex ed on top. Sex anyway is difficult to talk about because it's something that we all grew up with shame or negativity around it. It's not something we see other parents doing. We go to catch up with a friend and we don't see them teaching sex ed in the corner. We see them doing other stuff with their kid, but we never see other parents do sex ed. And we don't have good memories ourselves to rely on. So I think sex ed is probably, it's difficult for all parents, but I think it's more challenging when you've got kids with additional needs, because then you're sitting there thinking sex ed is going to be hard enough anyway, and then throw meeting the needs of an autistic child on top, and it makes it even harder because then you have those extra fears. There's more barriers. There's more things, I think, stopping us, because as a parent, you know your child best. You know what their traits are, their neurodivergent traits are. So I find a lot of parents are worried about talking about something and maybe a fixation starting on it, or it being repeated, or starting a curiosity or something. That's my thoughts on why it's so much harder.
Yeah, I think many of our children struggle with unpredictability and change anyway. And puberty is essentially like a long season of change, isn't it? So how can parents talk about it without it feeling overwhelming?
Starting early. Okay. I found this wonderful book when my daughter was about 4 or 5. It was by Babette Cole, who's an English author who's now deceased. Her books for kids are brilliant. She wrote a fantastic book called Hair in Funny Places. We read it. My daughter, she was 3 or 4 or 5 at the time, insisted on me reading it every night for nearly 6 or 9 months. And she was so excited about puberty happening because Babette wrote puberty into this gorgeous adventure of life to look forward to. So there's some wonderful books that you can read to kids from the age of 4 or 5 that just lets them know that they're not going to be a kid forever. They're going to get taller. And one day, like a butterfly or maggots lately in our house at the end of summer. But that whole life cycle where they change from one thing to another, just letting them know. And we can start letting them know early. Like if you're a mum and you've got a uterus and you still have periods, if you're sitting on the toilet, if kids see blood, they usually think blood and pain. So normalizing that and going, oh, no, that's just something that happens to grown-ups who have a vulva and blood comes out once a month, and letting kids normalizing it, like buying period products as you go down that aisle at the supermarket, just talking about puberty and talking about periods and making sure they know that one day they are going to grow up, and reassuring them as well, letting them know that it happens to all kids. Some kids it doesn't happen for and they need to have medication, but we don't usually need to talk about that unless they know someone who's like that. But it happens to all kids. It happens slowly. So it happens over years. It doesn't, you don't just wake up one morning and you're a grown up. So just normalizing it and just letting them know that these changes are going to happen.
I can imagine, that's really good advice, but I can just imagine one of my children, if I'm opening up those conversations, them starting those conversations with other people when we're out and about in really inappropriate places, aren't you?
Yeah. I always say conversations have two parts. You give them the information, but then you wrap your values and boundaries around it. So that could be like puberty happens to everyone, but it's a conversation that we don't always want to talk about at shops. It can be a private conversation. Sometimes you can liken it to the Santa Claus story when kids find out about Santa Claus. And as a parent, you have that fear that they're going to go to school and tell everyone the truth, and then your child will be that child that all the other parents hate. It's like that. It's puberty or periods or sex. That's a conversation that parents like to have with their own kids. They don't want, it's not your job to teach them. So you can put those boundaries in place. But at the end of the day, kids are going to hear about it anyway. So it's better they get it from you than the schoolyard.
Yeah, that's true.
Or porn.
Is puberty itself different for neurodivergent children, or is it more about how they process the experience and the changes, do you think?
Really good question, because I've just been diving into the research on this. It's the experience and processing the changes. When I got my diagnosis, I was really worried about being ableist and thinking. So I did some fantastic training from Awesome in Ireland. Have you come across them?
Yes, oh, I've heard of them.
Brilliant. They're neuroaffirming. They're just wonderful. So I did some of their training, which was fantastic. And part of it was about learning about all the different parts of what it means to be neurodivergent and how it has an impact. One of the really important things that I got from the ADHD training was being told that you don't develop habits with an ADHD brain. And for me, that was a real epiphany, because it was like, oh, so that's why kids struggle with remembering everything. And I know myself, I get up in the morning, I'm in my early 50s, so I've been getting out of bed for a very long time, washing my face, brushing my teeth, brushing my hair, deodorant, and I still have to walk myself through those steps every morning. And sometimes I'll forget a step, and it's like, so if that's how your brain's wired, and then puberty comes along and you can just get out of bed, have breakfast if you remember. But now there's all these extra things to remember as well. And that's why kids can really struggle with adopting the hygiene, managing the hygiene of it. And that's a complaint I hear the most from parents, is when kids are resistant. But the trick that I've learned with this is, and I tell people this all the time, and I'm guilty of making this mistake myself, is not jumping to conclusions. So my son doesn't like washing his hair, rarely does it. And one day I smell it in the car. And I said to him, you've really got to start washing your hair more. And we talked about why. And then I said, why don't you like washing it? It was a sensory thing. He doesn't like it getting in his face. And I thought, bloody hell, I asked him that 6 months ago. There's a solution for that, hair product. But instead, 6 months, I'd been nagging him about washing his hair. And I was like, I should listen to my own advice sometimes. But if kids are struggling with the routine, ask them why and then get them involved with the solution as well, because then they've got that little bit of ownership over it, but they might have more of an idea of what will help them to remember those routines as well. And then there's also sometimes there's other things that can be problematic with puberty, like the sensory, the sensation of like pubic hair is not like soft hair. It's a coarser hair. Sometimes it can be wrinkly and texture-wise, it can just feel yucky and icky. So some kids struggle with that. And then vaginal discharge, even though the vagina discharges, I think they say it vagina lubricates even in fetuses in utero. So it's always lubricating, but the lubrication, self-cleaning and the ovulating doesn't really kick in until puberty. So kids are used to having a dry crutch in their pants and then it starts to get wet. So they find white or yellow powdery in the crutch of their pants, or they go to wipe and it feels different and they're more aware of the discharge. Sometimes they can find that quite upsetting as well, because it's like never used to be a problem before, but now it's there. And if they're super sensitive with smell as well. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, as parents, we all know our own kids. So I've got one kid who's super sensitive with smell, the other one, not at all. But because we live with them, we tend to know what they complain about or what annoys them and what their quirks are. So I think it's about being aware of their traits or their quirks and then going, okay, if they're worried about smell, maybe the deodorant, I should get them to help me choose a deodorant or go for a low scent deodorant or something. And then the vaginal discharge, there's not a lot you can really do about that, but it's about normalizing it. And if they're worried about smell, maybe more undies with, you know, pure cotton, or period pants as well are another wonderful option as well. So it's about, I think, just being aware of what your kids' quirks are and then going, okay, this is what's going to happen during puberty. So what sort of hurdles can I expect? But yeah, save yourself time. And just ask the kid.
I had a similar experience with toothpaste. And it was the same. My son was refusing to brush his teeth. And I was on that, you must brush your teeth. You need to brush your teeth. And then when I actually said, why don't you want to brush your teeth? I don't like the toothpaste and it foams in it. Don't like the taste of it. Oh, okay, easy fix. Like you said, get a tasteless, non-foaming toothpaste. So it makes sense to ask those questions in a puberty-related sense as well.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. And the earlier you let them know, like, you can read the fun books from about that age of 4 or 5. Books are good because you don't have to know what to say. You just read the book. But from that age of 8, you want to start talking a little bit more noticeably about puberty and periods. You might go grab a book to read and read it together, like a chapter at a time, and just talk about the changes and how do you think you'd feel about that. And
do you have books that you would recommend for that sort of age?
You've got to be super, super careful. Publishers have worked out if you slap autism on the cover, it'll sell well. And I have noticed myself hopping on Amazon, there are so many self-published AI books. Mm-hmm. I do have a list on my website with books.
Okay.
When I started looking at what's the difference between a sex ed book for a kid who's autistic and a kid who's not, I thought there would be like this huge big difference, but there wasn't really. It was just simpler. They didn't make assumptions. They explained everything.
And that makes sense. Mm-hmm. What do small, repeatable sex ed conversations actually look like in real family life?
That's a good one. I've been doing sex ed rescue for about 12 years now, and I remember talking to a business coach about everyday conversations. And she turned around to me and said, Kath, but not everyone wants to talk about penises when they're having dinner. And it was like, oh, yeah, you're right. We all grew up with sex ed. That was a conversation at puberty, like the talk that you hear joked about on social media and in movies and on TV shows where it's that big, awkward sit-down conversation. And the reason that convo happened was puberty was starting, period. Ovulation, eggs, sperm, it's an age where kids could have sex and get pregnant. So let's have this big talk and tell them all about it. And then that's it. We know that approach doesn't work because we're all the failures. And when you look at why kids have unsafe sex and why we have unplanned pregnancies, it's usually based on ignorance. So if we know that big talk fails, the alternative, and this is the, I jokingly call it the lazy way to do sex ed, because honestly, it makes your job as a parent for sex ed so much easier, is just to be approachable, to be askable, to be driving in the car and go, oh, we've now got consent laws for sex. I didn't know that. Now, you don't have to say anything else, and that's it. That's actually sex ed. That's a statement that you've said. Or you might go, have your friends been talking about those consent laws with sex? Or you might walk down the period aisle and you go, I need some pads. Now, you know what pads are, don't you? And you might ask them a question or something like that. So what it is, it's lots of little conversations where you might say something, not expecting a response, but if you get one, let's go off and buy a lottery ticket. This is as kids get older. As they get to that puberty tween stage, they're a lot harder to engage with. But it's about having lots of small conversations where you might be watching a TV show. When they get to their teens, watch the shows that they want to watch, because you'll usually find lots of opportunities to talk about stuff. And you might see the way there might be a scene where someone's dating someone, but she's also seeing someone else on the weekends. So you might go, oh, that's not a really respectful way to treat someone. What do you think? So little things like that are sex ed. So we see opportunities to talk about things. So the idea is that when we're talking to them, they're getting that unspoken message that, oh, mum keeps rabbit, or dad keeps rabbiting on about consent, puberty, periods, sex all the time. So that means that if I've got questions, I can actually ask her and she'll answer me. So it makes your job a hell of a lot easier, because it means that if they've got questions, they're going to feel safer coming to you with those questions. It makes it easier, because it sounds like an awful lot of work, but it actually isn't. It's more just about keeping your ears open for opportunities, because what I find is we might have an idea that we need to talk more about consent or toxic masculinity because of the Louis Theroux show on Netflix about toxic masculinity. So we might go, oh, I really do need to talk about it. So you might say, oh, have you heard the kids at school talking about that new show on Netflix? Or you might hear something on the radio and go, oh, that's a good excuse for me to talk about this. So then you might say something. It's about looking out for opportunities and just having small conversations. Maybe once a month you might talk about something. It's not daily. It's when you see the opportunity, you grab it. And then you do have to plan some conversations. Some conversations you can't just wait for an opportunity to happen, and that's things like porn safety, consent, really. We always see lots of opportunities to talk about consent, but sometimes it helps to have a planned convo. Sex is usually another planned conversation as well. And then periods and puberty in more detail if you want to talk about it more as a bigger chat.
That's good advice. Thank you. I guess closely related is, what are some common mistakes that you see parents make when they panic or leave these topics too long? And what would you suggest they do?
What I've found, and I've been guilty of this one myself, is I was writing my porn talk course. And I'm sitting here writing it up. And then I looked to my side and I was looking at my 8-year-old son next to me. I'm sitting there and I thought, it's eight. Talk to him about porn. He'll start looking at it. Maybe I'll just stop writing this course. This is just crazy. And I caught myself and I was like, hang on. I actually know that this conversation's important. I put the boundaries and the rules and everything in place around it. So why am I doubting it? So I guess what I'm trying to say is that as parents, we don't want to harm our kids and we don't want to screw up. I think as parents, we always try to do a better job than how we were parented. And most parents want to keep doing a better job. And as parents, with our nurture instinct, we don't want to harm our kids. So if you're sitting there going, okay, I could talk about porn and this will happen, or I cannot talk about porn. It's safer to just not talk about it, which might be safer, but it doesn't safer for you, but it's not necessarily safer for the kid. And often the reasons that we have around porn is that they might go and look at it. You tell them not to. You put those boundaries in place. You explain what porn is. You explain what to do when they see it. And then you put the boundaries around. It's a private conversation. You shouldn't be talking about it in the schoolyard. If adults hear you talking about porn, you might get in trouble. So a common mistake that I see is that you have an idea to have a conversation and then you get this little gremlin sitting on the shoulder going, yeah, but what if you do this? This could happen and that could happen. So all of that stuff may happen, but it shouldn't stop you from talking, because as you talk, you're giving them that information, helping them to make sense of it, but then putting those guardrails and those boundaries around it as well, so that, yeah, hopefully they won't go off. But look, I still get things. I still think of topics to talk about and then I hesitate. So I try to catch myself that if I'm getting a doubt, like if I'm getting hesitant about a conversation or something, I stop myself and try to think, okay, what's putting the brakes on here? And usually 9 times out of 10, the reasons aren't valid. Kids need this information. They're growing up in a world where they're being exposed to sexualized content. The biggest mistake I see with parents is that hesitation, stopping because they think the conversation's going to harm their child or scare their child as well.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah. So how can parents make it easier for their autistic child to ask questions and keep coming back as they grow?
Just start having conversations. It can be little things like trying to have a routine where when kids come home from school or when you come home from work, sitting down with them at the table with a cuppa or a glass of wine if you need it, and talking about how their day went. What happened? What was the best thing about your day? What was the toughest part of your day? Or at the dinner table, doing that unwrapping and talking about stuff. So that's not sex ed, but that's about that connection. Because the way I teach sex ed is technically a parenting style. So it's about having that relationship where the kids know they can tell you stuff and that you'll listen. And if they want advice, you'll give it, but you'll just listen. So you're creating that safe place. And then it can be things like reading books. So what I did with my kids is, because they eventually hit an age where they refuse to read the books that you choose. So I would let them choose one night and then I might choose the next night. And then that way I could get like a sex ed or a puberty or a consent or body safety book in 2 or 3 times a week. So that is a nice, easy way. Libraries are really good. Be really nice to your local children's librarian, because they love it when parents come in with requests, because it happens so rarely. And if you come in with a request, they'll usually get it in for you if they can get it from their supplier or from another one. But librarians are pretty good with knowing what's popular and what parents want. So most libraries do have body safety, consent, feelings, family books and stuff. So the books, and then making sure that you're talking about stuff early on, so that if they're 8, you do need to start talking about puberty now, just because that gives them a couple of years to get more used to the idea. And then if you've got a tween or a teen, this is another lazy but effective technique for busy parents, watching TV shows with them. So when Stranger Things came out last Christmas, my son and I, we binge watched all the earlier ones together, so we just have our brain fresh on what we'd missed. So you might watch something, and if your kid will let you, you can say something then. My kids would always tell me to shut up and not talk while they're watching a show. So afterwards I'd have to say, hey, Ellen Mike, I thought their relationship was a bit unhealthy because in one of the ones, they were like 12, 13, they were constantly kissing and never going out with, not socializing with anyone other than themselves. So that was an opportunity to talk about a healthy relationship and boundaries and things. So TV shows, watching it with them and creating that routine, because kids want us, usually want to spend time with us as parents, their parents or carers. So creating that routine or that ritual where you might watch a film together on a Saturday night or every second Saturday. And if you have to sweeten it with a bar of chocolate or popcorn, I'm not averse to that sort of stuff because if it makes it more special. But it's the fact that you're spending that time together and then as you're watching the program, you'll find opportunities to talk about healthy relationships, consent, all the values that you feel are important in healthy relationships or what you want from your child in the future. So that can be another way. And then just looking for those opportunities to talk about stuff.
There's some really great tips there that you've shared.
Thank you.
If you're talking about the changes, say that a boy is going to go through, is there a way you would recommend doing that to reduce embarrassment?
At the end of the day, kids, they're not sitting there thinking, you don't have a penis, so what do you know about this? Or why are you talking to me about this? I think why parents like to offload dad with the penis, does the penis combos and person with the uterus and vagina vulva does those combos. There's been research that's showed that kids don't care, but they want also both parents. There's been a lot of period research that has said that when dads occasionally buy pads or stuff, that can be helpful for kids. It can help to break some of that shame down around it. So technically, look, I don't know about you, but most of us have had our adult body for a while and we don't really remember what it was like. We might remember that first pubic hair, but we tend to forget a lot of what happened. So just getting a kid's book and reading it yourself as well about puberty so that you're informed, and then reading the book with your kid and going, oh, so what do you think of that? What do you think about the fact that one day you'll look down there and there'll be a hair or two or three and that white stuff will come out of your penis one day? What do you think of that? It sounds pretty weird when you think about it. So being casual and just talking about it and letting them know that it's going to happen. So it's your own discomfort.
It's really good advice. And what about the emotional intensity for a child? So how can that intersect with autistic or ADHD nervous system?
There's a lot of research starting to slowly come out now that's acknowledging that the neurodivergent experience of hormones is different. So as a parent, what does that mean? It just means that you might get more swinging with emotions and you might just need to normalize it with your child. And by normalize, it's about letting them know that they're not the only one who might feel this way, that hormones are responsible for changing your body and they make your body grow up, but they're also responsible with how you feel as well. Because if we didn't have hormones, I don't think anyone would have sex, because sex, we usually do it because we've got sexual feelings and we have experienced sexual arousal and pleasure and stuff.
But if a parent is listening right now and feeling overwhelmed or worried about this stage of life, what would you say to them?
It's not a talk about everything now. If you've got the sort of a relationship where you know what your kid's neurodivergent quirks and traits are, and you've got a relationship where you're talking about stuff, and you can always start, like if you haven't been talking about this stuff, it's never too late. I've had parents reach out with 20-year-olds that started sex ed then. Their kids loved it. So it's about just focusing on the connection, creating a relationship where kids are happy to talk to you. And then it's you starting conversations and then looking for opportunities. But On my website, I've actually created some age guides, like, so it's sex ed for 0 to 2 year olds, 3 to 5s, and it gives a bit of an outline of the different things to talk about and then how to start those conversations as well. But easiest way, just go get some really good puberty period books. And look, both of our kids are neurodivergent, and I never read any of the autistic, ADHD, disability, sex ed books with them. If they didn't understand something, they asked me and we talked about it. So I wouldn't be too worried about getting a book that's labelled, because if it is labelled, it's probably just tokenism.
Yeah, that's good to know.
I do have a guide that sort of talks about a lot of the stuff that I've just talked about to the two of you, about how sex ed is different when kids are neurodivergent.
That's all excellent. We'll make sure that we include a link in our show notes to that.
Thanks.
And thank you so much for joining us today. It's great to tackle a topic that can be a bit daunting sometimes.
As parents, we're not alone. If you're struggling, others are as well.
Thanks for joining us today on the Autism Mums podcast. We hope you have found a little support, a little solidarity, and a reminder that you are not in this alone. If you enjoyed the episode, we'd love it if you'd follow the show and share it with another parent or carer who might need to hear it. And if you've got a story or a moment you'd like to share, we'd love to hear from you at www.theautismmums.com. Until next time, take care.